Good morning. Yesterday we sat to feast. Today many are set to shop. So are the chain store deals enticing us to get out early worth it? We'll get some Black Friday insight from Wallet Hub's Jill Gonzalez. Meanwhile, retailers in small boxes hope their neighborhood brand of customer service will draw you to their doors. Kathy Wiltse, the state director for the Hawaii Small Business Development Centers, gives us the local view of Small Business Saturday. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkirk. The 7th, 8th, and 9th grades at Volcano School of Arts and Sciences Middle School each have their own show in the upcoming production of Fairy Tales Galore. And a diverse group of paddlers, artists, and filmmakers makes its own music as the group Kauha'a. We'll hear a sample of their debut CD.
It's Friday, November 25th. That's The Conversation, and it starts after this news. Talking about a different Black Friday, but yeah, I'm not going out either.
I don't know what to make of that message, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's okay. There are many messages out there.
That's right.
And lots of folks hoping to get the holiday season underway, the retail season anyway.
It's with us now, isn't it?
You bet it is. And so is all that turkey from yesterday.
That's right.
Anyway, good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Conversation on this day after Thanksgiving. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
You are indeed. Today, we're talking about Black Friday, and we'll talk about that a little later in the show. But for the moment, we're going to look ahead to tomorrow. Now, in 2010, American Express and the U.S. Small Business Administration began a program to counter all the flashy emphasis on big box holiday shopping online and in stores. Between Black Friday and Cyber Monday came Small Business Saturday. The initiative was crafted to refocus attention on shopping small in neighborhoods and front streets and independently owned shops in the rest of the mall. Now, according to the U.S. Small Business Administration, last year, small businesses across the nation generated more than $16 billion in sales, and of the 95 million consumers who joined the shopping small movement in the past years, 77% said the day inspires them to shop small throughout the year. But is there any local proof of that? We called Kathy Wiltse, the state director of the Hawaii Small Business Development Centers, to find out.
We don't really track anything locally. We do help to promote it as a promotion through the U.S. Small Business Administration, as well as American Express, as you know. They were the ones who started it out. American Express did several years ago. I know they have numbers on it. We had not seen a big impact here in Hawaii, but we have been promoting it locally from all of our small business development centers for the last several years. Some of my staff members and myself went out and visited several local businesses in the downtown Hilo community. And although many of those people knew that it existed, they didn't realize it was already coming up. So we gave them promotional materials and things to put on their windows and connections to apps and things like that. And they were very excited about it and very receptive. So I see the excitement. I see the upturn in activity. But I don't know that it's been large here in Hawaii over the past several years.
Is there any indication that what happens on Small Business Saturday carries through to the rest of the year? I mean, have any of your members said to you, you know, we really noticed an uptick, or people coming back and saying, hey, I first walked in here on Small Business Saturday?
We don't track that level. And, you know, perhaps it would be a good way to look at some of the activity by maybe doing a follow-up survey after. But as I said, it seems to be an increasing level of interest, excitement about it. Our Maui Center is working very closely with the the mayor's office of economic development, and they have a large promotion going on, and it's quite exciting. It's getting a lot of impetus. So I suspect that after this year, we may have more numbers to support what it really means and what it brings to the small business community.
Kathy, what made the difference between the big promotions this year that are being done within the communities as opposed to years past? Because Small Business Saturday has been going on for years now.
Mm-hmm.
Are we just kind of slow on the uptake?
Perhaps. Small businesses, by their nature, are very independent, very individually focused. The thing is that now what we're seeing is you can do especially some local initiatives and some things in common helps everything get going and get some more excitement going on.
When I was looking through U.S. Small Business Administration information about Small Business Saturday, they're giving lots of tips about maximizing return on the holiday investment and how to bring people in, lots of marketing ideas for, you know, small businesses where they're just trying to keep it going and make a profit. Sometimes this is, becomes a little bit more challenging for people to create something that is memorable and noteworthy and that becomes, you know, that forward motion in bringing back clients or customers into the future. Anything that you can think of that has happened in that way that you've seen in any of the center's members that you've been talking with about Small Business Saturday, either this year or last year?
Well, I think the most notable part is that business here locally does seem to be picking up, and there's a lot more excitement. There's a lot of new ventures opening, that kind of thing. And people seem to be doing better. You know, of course, the economy has rebounded quite a bit. In Hawaii, one of the interesting things is that the businesses all tend to have some sort of a local flavor. So there's an automatic, if you will, niche that makes them special. And that's a really good thing for small businesses, especially when you compare them to the, you know, the big box stores. One of the things that we like to say is that if you have a national chain store, for example, in your community, and many people shop at them, and there are things that you can probably only get there, but only about 15% of that revenue, 15%, comes back to the local economy. If you compare that to the small business community, you see more like very close to 70% of that income actually is recirculated in the local community. It's those types of getting the word out to just the people in general. People don't think about that. And many people would love to support their local businesses, but they don't necessarily think of that as a value add to their local community. So that's part of what we're trying to do this year as a Small Business Development Center, is get more of that word out. We're using social media, Facebook, to try to reach out to that business community, both our own clients and the public in general, just to remind them.
We hear from people that, you know, they'd love to be able to shop locally, wherever locally for them would be, but they're also really concerned about the price point, and they tend to gravitate towards some of the warehouse or big box shopping alternatives. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you get something unique or different, or that people are, you know, recirculating those dollars in a way that, as you say, they should better understand. But is there a way of making the argument of spending a few more dollars to be in a locally owned shop when they will also turn around and say, yes, but the big box retailer is also employing local people?
That is certainly true. They employ local people. However, the whole numbers thing about how much really stays in your local economy, when I talk about 15% going to the local economy, that's pretty much the labor and what that puts back into the economy.
Those are salaries.
The profits go out. They are not local. So except for, you know, perhaps general excise tax or other local taxes, the majority of that money is not staying local. It's going to corporate. And I think part of it is just reminding people that there's a very large I would say, a desire to help the local community, but it needs to be brought more top of mind.
I think you just did that. Kathy, thanks so much for the time. Kathy Wiltsey is the state director of the Hawaii Small Business Development Centers. She's based in Hilo. Small Business Saturday happens around the country tomorrow, including in Kauai, where you might think it's always Small Business Saturday. John Lefkowitz runs the center there.
When you think of businesses here, the two biggest industry sectors are accommodations and then retail trade, and especially when retail trade is so much oriented towards tourism, really their every day is an important day for our small business people.
But for people who live and work on Kauai, as well as throughout Hawaii, the idea of going out and making a concerted effort to go and do some neighborhood shopping and go into a boutique maybe that you haven't been into for a while or one that you don't know anything about seems to be what we're being asked to do. How effective is that in telling people how to direct their spending?
You know, I think it's mixed. You know, my sense on the island is whether it's talking about local meals or local products, that everybody is very supportive of it. And at the same time, economic circumstances dictate that you're always kind of looking for the best deal. So some of our big box stores here that, perhaps you'd rather go someplace else, but it so happens that you can get a comparable product for less. You know, it really is kind of mixed. I think it's great that we do promote it, but, there is that economic reality as well.
That one seems to be a big driver for most people, the idea that, yeah, I'd like to do this, but I really have to look at the world with what my wallet can afford, and that means that I'm going to go do a big box thing. Doesn't that set up also the sense of maybe of a lack of neighborhoodliness?
You know, my sense is that we really do have a sense of community here, and that I think we all kind of recognize that issue that we're up against. So, and I think we have a tendency to think of ourselves as in it together. We try to do what we can.
If there were a lesson that you'd like to send over to Oahu or to any other place where people clearly have a choice between going to the big box all the time or taking the time to investigate some of the smaller shops and mom and pops in your own neighborhood or in a nice neighborhood that you like, what would you tell them?
Well, what I would emphasize is that we're in it together and that, you know, supporting each other is what it's all about. And to do that as best we can. Again, you know, their economic circumstances are always going to be there. But I think, you know, first and foremost, just kind of remember that we're all part of this island. We're all here together, especially on a small island like Kauai. I think we feel that sense of community. And, you know, we value that sense of community. And one good way to kind of demonstrate it is to buy local, you know, shop local where and when you can.
John Lefkowitz is the Kauai director of the Hawaii Small Business Development Center, talking about Small Business Saturday happening tomorrow.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up in the show, the world of fantasy and fairy tales on Hawaii Island. But first, your quiz.
Hopefully you're lucky enough to have a long weekend for the Thanksgiving holiday, and if you are, you might be one of the folks enjoying a staycation at Hawaii's oldest hotel. Back in 1846, it was a simple grass hut. 20 years later, it was replaced with a four-bedroom wooden frame structure. A devastating fire destroyed the hotel in 1940, but it didn't stay that way for long. It was soon resurrected as a 24-room wood and stone building built to the southwest of the original site. By 1953, the establishment's visitor capacity had increased with the addition of a new 8-room wing. There have been many visitors in its history, including such noted guests as Mark Twain, Robert Louis Stevenson, and French microbiologist Louis Pasteur. For today's quiz, can you name this hub of island hospitality that has endured through the decades? Our phone operator is on his way there right now, so as he's having a staycation, just send us an email to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
The middle school years can be an abrupt transition for some kids. As adulthood looms, hormones begin to rage, and the social pressure builds. It's an excellent time of life to get involved in theater, with its emphasis on cooperation and its celebration of every cast member's individual gifts. For Kilauea Drama and Entertainment Network's Susie Bond, it's an opportunity to bring out the best in her 7th, 8th, and 9th grade charges. Each grade has its own production in the upcoming show, Fairy Tales Galore, and we spoke with her about it the other day.
We're a small, nonprofit community theater company. We're based on the edge of the volcano at the Kilauea Theater and Kilauea Military Camp.
Mm-hmm.
We basically do at least two productions a year, our annual summer musical, and then something in the winter to early spring time frame. This year we're looking to do an Agatha Christie murder mystery in March at some point, hopefully.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, we also sponsor the Volcano Festival Chorus, and their concert is on the 3rd of December. The kids program, Volcano School of Arts and Sciences, I originally started as a volunteer in 2005 because it was the School of Arts and Sciences, and they didn't have one of the instructors there, Don Lawrence, who teaches social studies, felt that theater would be a good part of the program. And mostly the theater program is not really about as much about theater as it is about confidence and self-esteem and working together, teamwork, working as an ensemble. It's about helping them to memorize, helping them to focus, creativity. It's about a lot of other things, and we use theater as the vehicle.
Sure. Well, you're starting at sixth grade, right?
It's 6th, 7th, and 8th. It's mm-hmm. middle school kids.
Mm-hmm.
So middle school kids are going through enough stuff as it is. Their bodies are changing. They're starting to test different boundaries. And it's a very awkward, shy point in their life, in most of their lives. And so it's a good time to kind of catch them and give them a little bit of confidence and self-esteem. And this also is to help them with presentations in classes. You know, as you go in through high school
sure.
and into college, you have to get up and talk in front of a class. And years ago, there was a study done, and the number one fear in this country is speaking in public.
Mm-hmm.
Death is number two. So people would rather die than speak in public. So we're trying to get it to the point where they at least are comfortable talking in a group and can, you know, get up and speak in front of a group of people. And at eighth grade, when they have their eighth grade graduation, they all get up and say something on the stage. And it's a big part of what's going on. It gives them it helps them out a lot with that. 12 years I've been doing this, I think. I've only had one kid that absolutely refused to go on stage and total stage fright. And it's funny because that was one of the most outgoing people in the class, but that stage thing, can't do it.
That's the thing that bites a lot of people, but you know, the people who have dealt with stage fright, and even some experienced performers still have it, but they speak of that transition once you start the show where that becomes a form of energy that you can channel. Is that how
right.
it works with your guys?
Yeah, it generally does. I mean, it's funny because, you know, oh, I'm going to throw up. Oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Oh, you know, and it's like, just breathe. get out there, you'll be fine. And then as soon as they're out there and they come back off, they're like, that was so great. So it's really fun to watch that transition take place with
sure.
these kids. It's part of the joy of the whole program. And I've had kids send me notes that say, you know, before your class, I couldn't even go up to a group of people and join in a conversation, and now I feel comfortable doing that, and that type of thing. So that's what the program's all about. And we use silly one-act plays as opposed to a lot of schools like to do, like, historical dramas or, you know, base it on something that they're learning and have the kids write it. And my approach is, let's give them something that's due, and then they can, you know, they can then ask questions about things. You know, like one of the shows has on Candid Camera, and the kids are all like, what's Candid Camera? Which for me was like, duh, but for them, they'd never heard of it. So I explained about the 60s television and you know, Candid Camera and how that all came about, and all of a sudden they're getting a lesson in something they didn't know about. Different lines from different shows, they're like, what does that mean? And you explain it to them, so they get a lesson in other things as well. It's kind of an all-encompassing program, and yet, you know, we do it without letting them know they're being taught.
Well, that's, you know, you got me thinking about this stage of life, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, which, as you say, it's kind of the dawn of self-consciousness, right?
Right.
And I notice, and you have plays for each grade, and each one of them encourages the kids to get on stage and be silly, which goes right at that whole worried about what people are going to think
right.
thing. But you sort of break through that, I would think, with this, you know, get on stage and just be uninhibited, right?
That's part of it. We did a show that we actually redid last May. It's called Poultry in Motion. And it's basically, there's a little red hen character, and then there's ducks and turkeys and geese and chickens and a fox in it. And the first time we did it, this kid, the boy that was playing the rooster, and he was just, you know, he was just sort of being himself. And I said, come on, you know, let's see some real chicken action, you know. And nothing. I'd get nothing throughout rehearsal. And the first time we did the rehearsal for the school, all of a sudden this rooster came out. And his head was bobbing and his arms were going and the whole thing. And the more he did it, the more the kids laughed. And the more the kids laughed, the more he did it. And it was awesome to watch. And he's now... actually a nursing student getting ready to graduate from college from, you know, a nursing program. And I've seen him come such a long way since I could barely get him to be a rooster. So it's kind of fun to watch them grow, too. And they come back and talk to me all the time.
I would think it'd be a lot of fun, especially, you know, to see somebody unleash his inner rooster like that.
Yeah, he was so cute. He jumped up on a cube and did the great. I was so proud of him.
It's got to be a really fun vocation for you, Susie.
It this is, you know, I'm also sort of working with these kids and creating a farm team for the theater.
Sure.
You know, I don't get a lot of them that come and join us in the theater, but every year I get two or three, and then they stick with me through a number of summer musicals, and then off to college they go. And I've had some of them major in like music as therapy. Get theater degrees to work with autistic people. So they, you know, they don't realize what the value was when they started, but later it becomes a passion of theirs. And that to me is the rewarding part of this whole thing.
It sounds very rewarding.
Because they drive me absolutely bonkers during rehearsal. You know, you get nothing. They don't know their lines. You know, and I'm just like, come on, you guys. And then they get an audience, and all of a sudden it's like, la, here we are. We know everything. And it's like, why don't you guys help out earlier on in the process?
So, it's just the way things are, Susie.
Yeah, it is. But they're really great to work with, they're preteens. You know, the hormones ping off the walls on days, and you just sort of have to go with it.
Susie Bond is the director of the Volcano School of Arts and Sciences Middle School production of Fairy Tales Galore. The performance will be at the Kilauea Theater in the Kilauea Military Camp on Thursday evening, December 8th at 6 o'clock. Admission is free, and you can learn more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page. Good morning. It's 8:30, and you're tuned to The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Coming up, Wallet Hub's perspective on Black Friday, and later the music of Kauha'a with the emphasis on summer fun. But first, the news from the BBC.
This Saturday on Bridging the Gap, I'm playing an eclectic mix of music to help you shake that Thanksgiving food coma. We'll hear some new music from Giles Peterson's Havana Project, Kate Renata, and the Olympians. I'm Mr. Nick. Join me this Saturday evening from 6 to 8 for Bridging the Gap, here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting, Sacred Hearts Academy, and Urgent Care Hawaii.
It's a Friday, and that means we read your letters and emails. Keith Richmond from Honolulu wrote this on our Facebook page.
I liked your recent show about local voting contests and issues. I mail mine in early. I remember being frustrated at showing up at polling stations, trying to remember what little I had researched beforehand about charter amendments and lower office contests. I ended up voting on a hunch or from the title of the amendment. At least at home, I can research each thing. I have to add, though, that I wish proposals were published verbatim somewhere online. I don't like being dependent on interpretations by independent sources or sources that have skin in the game. Just my two cents.
After my interview with Vic Kraft on Veterans Day about some sort of required civil or military service for young people, we got this Facebook post. I heard part of this on The Conversation this morning and wanted to point out that maybe this would make sense if it included options like the Peace Corps, Forest Service, and Park Service. Nobody can or should expect people to support war, the military machine, and the U.S. interventionism around the world. Many of us are in complete opposition to violence, the unfathomable environmental impact created by the U.S. military, and the real reasons the military conducts most of its operations, U.S. economic dominance. Marlo Mitty.
And this came in after our backyard quiz about the rose-ringed parakeet. Hi, Ms. Kozlovich. I heard these creatures mentioned on your show. We could be doing something to prevent the spread of this pest. There's something that can be added to their seed at feeding stations that makes them infertile. Kind of amazing, really. They don't have to eat much of it for it to be effective. Parrot and parakeet lovers will not be irate, as the existing population merely dwindles without killing them. DLNR says they don't have the funds, but the cost on crops and native species seems worth some feeding stations. I would love to have you let the public know through your show that something can and should be done. Many thanks. Shane Stambler, Honolulu.
Thanks for the letters. You can call us anytime. Our talkback line is 808-792-8217, or you can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And, of course, there's always Facebook and Twitter. Remember when there were huge predictable sale dates all around the calendar? Online access to best prices changed that. So while the January white sale may be a thing of the past, Black Friday sales endure, sometimes starting late Thursday afternoon. But are the flashy advertised deals worth the effort when you could stay home and shop in your jammies? We called consumer finance website Wallet Hub to ask spokesperson Jill Gonzalez whether we're still as focused on Black Friday when we can get anything at any time online. So, are we?
We are. So we did look at a bunch of deals, 8,000 to be exact, from the top 35 U.S. retailers to really see, are these things cheaper on Black Friday than literally any other time of the year? And 80% of the time, that is still the case. So there's a few items that they won't apply to, but 80% of the time, it's still worth it to get out there and shop.
So what things are absolutely worth it? Were there categories that you thought that, you know, people should, if they're shopping for this thing, Black Friday is the day to go?
Absolutely. So it does depend on exactly what you're looking for. And of course, the shopping season has just started. So there are certain times to get certain things. But computers, phones, consumer electronics, that's really when Black Friday still shines. There's a lot of doorbusters out there that are really worth it.
Any particular stores that you can mention?
Macy's was the best this year out of all the retailers that we looked at. The average store-wide discount there is just under 64% off, and that's average. If you're looking for clothes later on in the season, you might see them up to 70, 75% off.
There's been this idea that one of the reasons that happens is because there's, you know, cheap and deep with the clothes, and so there's more margin there and the idea of moving it through very quickly. But who cares if you're getting a great deal?
Exactly, yeah. Of course, there's ideas of inventory, right? Just moving that out before 2017 inventory comes in. But there's also different times to be getting different things. So say cheap and deep for clothes, for instance. All of those soft goods, clothing, shoes especially, that's actually going to see better deals next week. Even in stores, I know it's Cyber Week, but even in stores, you're going to be seeing some of those online savings really transfer into the stores as well. So if you don't see exactly what you want on Black Friday, you might be able to hold out, go to a different store the week after.
Are there things that you absolutely should forget about buying on Black Friday?
I would say hold off on those apparel and accessories until later on in the season. Things that are really going to be good deals are toys, computers and phones, consumer electronics, appliances, if you need them. I know typically not on the stocking stuffer list, but great deals on appliances. One thing that you should avoid is certainly jewelry. First of all, we know the markup is ridiculous to begin with. But on Black Friday itself, you really don't see significant discounts. You might see them later in the season, right before Christmas itself, up until Christmas Eve.
So all of those circulars that come out with great jewelry prices, and even with Macy's, where they have pages and pages devoted to their fine jewelry, really isn't worth it?
Not so much, not especially as much as things like appliances, electronics, furniture. That's where the steeper discounts are going to be. Jewelry, it's really hard to discern what is a good deal just because the markup varies throughout the year and it is so high to begin with.
What about things like, you know, gift cards? So many people think, well, I don't know what to buy, so I'll get them a gift card. And yet we know that very often they wind up in the drawers and they're unspent.
Consumers think differently about gift cards now than, say, 5 years ago. So when the National Retail Federation did a survey of what people want this year, gift cards were actually the number one most wanted gift. And a lot of them were to places like Target. Netflix discounts have been huge this year as far as gift cards go, and places like Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts. So either for convenience, places where they can get anything they want, people do want gift cards.
So that seems to be the real thing. If you can get anything you want and here's a gift card to that store, you're probably going to see that it's going to be fulfilled and somebody will be enjoying that gift, certainly for the foodstuffs. What about the fact that some of these things, when you go to stores, don't necessarily look like they came off a truck yesterday? What about those things? How much recycling is really done?
Yeah, we did take a look. We compared this year's ad scans to last year's, and we saw that just about 11% of the deals have been recycled. And that's throughout retailers. Some do it a little bit more than others. Amazon does it a lot, but so does Macy's, so does JCPenney. So it's really pretty common here, and it's a double-edged sword. On some points, it is really good for the consumer because these are oftentimes deals that did very well last year that the retailer is now bringing back. It's not necessarily the same model of the camera. It's the newer model, but the same deal. So not necessarily all bad things. And then, of course, there are one-off deals like a bouncy house on Amazon.com that you tend to think they need to get this inventory out the door.
You talked about things that might be a good deal for consumers, less expensive, things to be watching for, things maybe to be waiting for, anything that would actually be more expensive on Black Friday because of the markup?
A few things are more expensive. This only happens around 17% of the time. So we looked last week and compared the prices on Amazon to what the retailers were saying was going to be the price on Black Friday itself. And again, this happened often to jewelry and to some consumer electronics. So some items that retailers know are going to be popular won't see that much of a discount on Black Friday, even though it is sold as a Black Friday deal.
And finally, Jill, because I know you look at a lot of issues, a lot of consumer issues, is it better to be using a store credit card, or are there credit cards that you would think you should be using regardless?
So this could definitely be answered with a yes and a yes. There are certain cards, especially if you just open them, that have great initial bonuses. If you're spending $3,000, $4,000 this year on your holiday list, then first of all, bless your heart. But there are credit cards out there that really reward you heavily for that. So the Chase Sapphire Preferred is one of them. You basically get two free domestic flights for spending that much in the first 3 months you open it. But that being said, there's a lot of very lucrative store cards out there as well. One of them is the Target card. Not only do you get a discount up front, you get 5% off of all of your purchases going forward. The same can be said for Amazon. Then Kohl's and Toys R Us also have great cards.
All right. Well, on that happy note, we'll say goodbye and hope you have an enjoyable rest of your Thanksgiving weekend. And we'll talk soon. Thanks again.
Anytime. Have a good one.
Jill Gonzalez is a spokesperson for Wallet Hub. Her take on consumer finance issues has been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Kiplinger.
Aloha, I'm Annie Cusick-Wood from Honolulu Theatre for Youth. You're tuned to HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. Join the conversation on Twitter, talk back to your radio at HIConversation.
Helping people.
It made me feel good.
Taking care of people.
It's just something that you want.
I wanted to help.
Hi everyone, this is Bob Wehrman. It's time for The Benevolent Mind, our quest to discover the spark that ignites giving. Kimo Campbell, who was raised in Eva Beach, spent most of his life in Northern California. He was an environmental activist and was strongly opposed to the Vietnam War, which he protested in the 1960s in the Bay Area. Even though he no longer lived in Hawaii, it always occupied a warm place in his heart. He was very concerned that Hawaii would succumb to pollution and drought, as had many other states. So he started the Pohaku Fund with the Hawaii Community Foundation so he could be certain that it would always maintain an element of environmental grant making. Kimo's idea worked. For during the past 16 years, the Hawaii Community Foundation has secured and spent about $33 million to fund many environmental groups, such as the Community Restoration Project, which has supported coastal protection for over 30 locations across the state. And they've helped to launch the School Gardens Program and the Freshwater Initiative, all because of Kimo's idea. This is an example of one small but good idea which produced astonishing results. Our program is a production of Hawaii Public Radio and is sponsored by the Hawaii Community Foundation, believing for 100 years that philanthropy is all about you.
Earlier in the show, we were looking back in time to find Hawaii's oldest hotel. It began in 1846 as a simple one-room shelter made of grass and ohia wood poles. This was replaced by a four-bedroom wooden frame structure in 1866. Mark Twain wrote about his stay there in his book Roughing It, calling the establishment a neat, roomy, well-furnished, and a well-kept hotel. He was also surprised to find such a place situated in what he referred to as an outlandish spot. A year after a devastating fire reduced it to ashes, it was rebuilt not far from the original site. The 24-room wooden stone hotel opened in November of 1941. In 2013, it reopened again after a three-year closure for heavy renovations. Today, Hawaii's oldest hotel includes a 150-seat restaurant and more than 30 rooms, 20 of which come with a volcano view. Despite all these changes, one thing has stayed the same all these years, and that's the name of the Big Island's Volcano House, located on the rim of Kilauea Caldera in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. That's today's Backyard Quiz, and if you have an idea for us, send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org, and it might just become another Backyard Quiz. The members of the music group Kauha'a are a close-knit lot, a bond they formed as fellow paddlers in the Huinalu Canoe Club. It's a natural progression from riding the waves to crafting their debut CD called Summer Fun. Their music has a freewheeling, happy spirit to it, one that comes from not overthinking it. Founding member Anne Marie Kirk spoke with us about their music.
Kauha'a came together just as a real love of the ocean, and I had written these songs and wanted to see if my friends would be interested in being a part of it. And They came in kicking and screaming, by the way. I had to show them the songs, play it for them, and say, hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. And when they realized that it was really about the joy of music rather than being so afraid of the technical parts or how am I singing, then everyone just got on board, and it's been a blast.
I'm really surprised that it was such a tough sell, because the principal effect of listening is that you guys are having fun.
Exactly, and I think that once they really realize there was so much laughter involved, that I think that comes across in the recordings of just the joy we had. And I think in music today, people are so serious and get really afraid of picking up a ukulele or a guitar and just trying it out, even if you only know two chords. And I want to get across that idea to my friends, like, hey, let's just go for it.
I think there is a lot of that, Anne-Marie, out in the world, that people think that you have to have this really high level of proficiency. And if you don't, people hold themselves back from expressing themselves.
Exactly. And I think, you know, when you look at, well, I look at the music that I love, like Elvis Presley's Sun Sessions. You go back to those great old rockabilly songs, and they're mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4 chords at the most. Mm-hmm. And it's not that complicated. It's just, you know, stepping into that space and go, hey, I'm just going to have fun. And I think when you break the songs down, like these songs for Kauha'a, they're really just a few basic chords, but around that is built so much aloha and fun, and then bringing in other musicians that really brought the songs to another level.
You know, when you use that example of those Elvis songs,
yeah.
those first ones, That's All Right, Mama, and those,
yes.
they just knocked them out with really no sense that anybody was ever going to hear them. That was the way they would have played them at a party.
Exactly. I mean, I love this song called Just Because, and it's just about 3 chords, and it's just a rocking song. And that's how I kind of approached Hut Ho. It's kind of that Elvis, Sun Sessions, Bo Diddley kind of, you know, kind of song for canoe surfing, because we really don't have anything for canoe surfing.
Yeah.
And I thought, wouldn't it be great to write this song and then a year from now walk onto the beach and there's a little party going and someone else is playing it? You know, I thought that would be a really fun
yeah.
thing to do.
Kind of like you guys needed an anthem, right?
Exactly.
Let's hear a little bit of that song while we're talking about. This is Hut Ho?
Yes.
That's the Bo Diddley, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
The Bo Diddley beat. Bump, da bump, da bump, dum da bump, bump.
Exactly. And it's basically written on ukulele. I mean, I just picked up the ukulele and started playing and thought, I mean, I sit in the seat. I paddle for Huinalu Canoe Club, and I sit in the seat where you call out Hut Ho. And I thought, oh my God, I've been saying this for years. So what if I wrote a song about it? And that's what came about. But it's basically those few chords, Bo Diddley, Elvis style. And my friends, when we were singing, you know, we're rocking out to it in the recording studio, which was really great to see. And it's great to see the little kids bop around when they've heard the song. So it's exciting.
In an atmosphere like the recording studio, which can get sort of sterile and make you worry if you're doing it right and all that stuff, was it hard to get to that sort of party feel with your friends?
No, because if you know the girls that are singing with me, it's Lokai Maloa, Shelley Kahuanuife, and Terry Maltaire. Now, Shelley and Terry are two tall, more darker-skinned Hawaiian girls, and Lo is in the middle, and Lo is a fair-skinned Hawaiian-at-heart girl, and so I call them the Kulolos with the Haupia Center. So once I gave them their background name, they were into it, and they were rocking and rolling. So that kind of sterile atmosphere really turned into a party atmosphere.
You also can really feel the comradeship of paddlers.
Yes. And I think, you know, that's built over years of paddling together. I paddle with Shelley and Terry again at Huinalu, and then Lo and I are stand-up paddlers in Mauna Loa Bay. So that love of the ocean, you know, I wrote a song called Kaiwahine Lullaby. And in that song, it's about singing about the Ka'iwi Channel, and it's, I'll spend my lifetime falling in love with you. And that meant the ocean. There's that love affair that just deepens as years go by. And the ocean and the canoe bring so many people together. And, it was a great thing to do this with my friends.
Do you come to this from a place of much musical training, or is it basically just you play ukulele and sing?
The only musical training I had was Sacred Hearts Academy with the nuns, you know, teaching us how to sing church songs. But that's basically it. And it came from being, you know, I don't know what made me do it, but I picked up a guitar and picked up a ukulele. And I thought, you know, I don't want this to be complicated. I want to learn how to write songs, but I'm really into the songwriting process. The singing is something new for me. But I love songwriting to capture a feeling or a moment within 2 to 3 minutes. And the buildup of a song. I mean, my background is a film director and a story catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take a long time to tell those stories. But in the song process, you can do it by yourself with that piece of paper and your instrument. And where the film process can take a long time to build a story.
Well, you also, a good song has a very compact, as you say, 2 or 3 minute narrative thread.
Yes. Know? Yeah, and that thread that you try and build upon in the songwriting process, and again, my apologies to real songwriters out there, I'm a new one, but I find that buildup of an emotion or a feeling or that thought you're trying to get across is really great when you come to the end of the song and you've accomplished that. And that's what we try to do with Kauha'a. Like, I'm a huge fan of Hapa'ole music, Charles Kaipo and the Happy Hawaiians.
Uh-huh.
This is one of my favorite all-time CDs. And just the joy you have when you listen to that kind of music. And to try and thread all those ideas through the songs in Kauha'a. So I tried to do a Hapa'ole song, but something different. So we have a tuba in there, you know, and to say, you know, you can have fun. The ukulele can be a sexy instrument, too. And then the last song on the CD, which is, God, what is it called? That's my train of thought.
It's called I'll Sing For You.
I'll Sing For You. That was just trying to, again, use the ukulele in a different way. And to, again, make a little sexy song. But again, speaking about Hawaii, Hawaii is a thread through all these songs in the ocean.
There's also the thread that I hear also is that if you want to write songs, if you want to sing, just go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of my friends, I said, you know, if you know 3 chords, you can probably play 1,000 songs.
Easily.
Whether it's CFG or ADE.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, not that difficult, although on the ukulele, E chord always gives people problems, the positioning of it. But the idea of how to express yourself and to don't be afraid. I think we live in a world now where people watch The Voice or American Idol or whatever it's going to be, and they've become very critical before stepping back and being joyful with that person that's sharing their voice and sharing their musical talent. And it could be just 3 chords, like someone like me who plays with 3 chords. But, you know, really to want to express how I felt about the ocean, about canoe paddling, you know, just these different things. And I'm so appreciative of having that little ukulele next to my bed where I can pick up and just start playing and writing.
I think you're onto something, Anne-Marie.
Thanks
so much.
Thank you so much.
Anne-Marie Kirk sings and plays ukulele in Kauha'a, which has just released a 3-song CD called Summer Fun. And you can learn more about the group on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Early in the morning, the sun's peeking through the dark cloud of curtains that line my room. And I think of you, I think of you.
some coffee, turn on the morning news to learn about my world, but my world is you, my world is you.
Well, the holidays are now officially underway. There's no escaping it anymore, is there?
No, and for a lot of people, escape isn't exactly the word they would use, but, you know, it can be a bit much some of the time, especially when you see the sale time starting earlier and earlier than, you know, 6 o'clock on last night, and sometimes starting so very early in the morning when you just kind of want to nestle in and cuddle and be close with your family and have breakfast and just, you know, spend the holiday with family or with friends. So, yeah, I'm the curmudgeon this time.
Well, it does show how much of a consumer society we've become, that it's become a separate event all its own to go out and buy.
Yeah, we were always been sort of driven to buy, but when and how and with what great deals. And as you heard Jill Gonzalez say a little earlier, some things are worth it and some things just aren't. And especially, you know, jewelry, which turns up in many a stocking, maybe best to wait till next week or the following week to be able to get that present.
You know, I'm thinking of the satirist Tom Lehrer's song, Angels We Have Heard on High Tell Us to Go Out and Buy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We know where those angels are. They're the top of many a corporate building.
That's right.
That's going to do it for us for this Friday. We hope that however you spend the rest of your holiday weekend, it's enjoyable and lots of fun, too. Now, the president-elect is sending clear signals that America's position on climate change will itself change. Perhaps Hawaii Professor Anu Hiddle is back from the 22nd Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. And on Monday, she's going to join us with some of the key issues.
And music and mentorship with singer-songwriter Mailani Makainai.
We like to hear from you, and you can call our talkback line anytime and leave us your comments at 808-792-8217. Or you can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation or tweet me at BKOZHBR.
And you can hear the music that you've heard on the show played back on hawaiipublicradio.org, where you can also listen back to today's show. Our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
Lillian Song produces the program. Ryan Finnerty and Russell Subiono are our production assistants.
And the Backyard Quiz theme is written for us by John DeMello. I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll see you on Monday when we pick up the conversation. Have a great weekend.